Weekend huddle here at 102.5 The Game. Brandon Bigsby, Red Christian Skelton, and myself, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, here on 102.5 The Game. Kind of wrapping up our conversation last hour with Red's thoughts on the whole debacle with the SEC, kind of being powerless, and just the aspect of how could this, you know, benefit the Big 12 and be negative on college football.
My opinion on this for the Big 12 and the ACC, there's a couple ways they can handle this. One, they can take the high road and say, we're not allowing any of this crap. We don't want any of this crap in college football, which I would commend them for, and I think most people would. What I would do, though, if they really want to just get as what is best for their conference competitively, if they're trying to be as competitive a conference as possible, if I'm the ACC, I'm calling up Dabo and I'm saying, I don't care about your morals. I don't care about your ethics. Call as many of your former players from last year that are close to getting cut right now and see how many of them you can get on campus. If I'm the Big 12, I'm calling Kenny Dillingham. I'm calling Dion. Any of those big brands, big-ish brands that you've got, just try to just go all in on this. Because, I mean, if you're obviously the Big 12 and the ACC are seen as the lesser two conferences of the Power Four conferences. And, you know, if you're the commissioner of those conferences, one of your main goals, get as many teams in either the playoff discussion or in the playoff as you possibly can. And what better way to do that than doing that, as slimy as it kind of is, as we all know.
Brando?
Yeah, I mean, I echo everything that Red just said there. There's two roads that you can take, right? It's kind of like, you know, the angel on your shoulder and the devil on your shoulder. I think that if the Big 12 and the ACC were to take a stand and say, hey, we're not allowing this. We don't think it's ethical. We don't think it's good for the game. We don't think it's good for the future of college athletics. And we don't think it's good for the long-term outlook of the sport. So we're not going to allow it. I think that every single person outside of maybe the coaches and the players that want to participate in that will applaud them and say, good on you, Big 12 and ACC, for doing the right thing and standing up, even though it wasn't easy. However, as we all know, winning is king, money is king, and the best way to make money is to win and win a lot. And I think that the Big 12 and the ACC, especially considering the conversation we had earlier about how they've always had the look of being a little bit lesser than when it comes to the SEC and the Big 10, I wouldn't be shocked at all if they wanted to take advantage of it. I just wouldn't. I think that they could see this as an opportunity. I think they could see this as their chance to try to even the playing field and maybe get one up on the SEC and Big Ten, who tried to take that stance and say, hey, see, you guys don't have the power you think you do. You're just like us. We are all equals. We are all in the same tier. And not only that, but you're not better than us either. So I would not be surprised if that is the way that goes. It just depends on, do you value the morality and the ethics of it and the long-term view of what this could do to college athletics, or do you value the short-term benefit and kind of just dismiss the damage that it could do in terms of the long-term for college sports?
Yeah, it's like that scene out of The Office when Michael Scott and Dwight, and I think Pam and Jim, they're all pointing, you know, finger guns at each other in the office break room, and they're like, all right, who is it? Who is it? And they're all pointing at, this is what college football is. That's what all these conferences are doing. They're all pointing fingers at each other, trying to figure out the future. And I just think that's a perfect way of just putting it for the time being. And you know, kind of adding on to that, as we kind of morph into our bold predictions for the season, I'll start off with this, and it kind of involves LSU. I think LSU misses out on a New Year's Six Bowl. I'm just getting right into it. I'm sorry. The bold predictions of the college football season for me, my first one is LSU. I think they go 8-4, 9-3, and just squeak into a nice bowl, but not a New Year's Six Bowl.
Well, I guess great minds think alike, because that was also one of mine. So,
No way.
My exact one, though, it was just LSU won't make the playoff. So you are a little bolder than me saying they won't be on a New Year's Day Bowl at all. But I guess New Year's Day Bowl isn't as, you know, the New Year's Day Bowls aren't as New Year's Day Bowls as they used to be, if that made sense.
Yeah, but like, think of it this way. When Lane Kiffin was at Ole Miss, he always struggled beating Alabama, right? Always struggled getting over the hump. And I feel like for LSU, that is the standard. And I've been well-versed in that with, you know, a few of my friends being LSU fans. That is Bible. That is what you have to do. You have to beat Alabama every single year. And if they don't do that, I think that will kind of spiral down their season. Along with that, they play Texas. And as much as some people may not be high on Arch Manning, they have a really good running back that transferred from NC State, and that's Hollywood Smothers. I watched that kid play last year. Holy cow, he is a fun player to watch. And not only that, they have one of the best wide receivers in all the country, and that's Cam Coleman. Cam Coleman and you have Hollywood Smothers, a 1-2 punch, one in the backfield, one on the exterior part of your wide receiver room. You just have to make sure you have enough offensive line protection. And I think Texas did a really good job with that this past offseason, getting those interior defensive linemen, the guards. And I think they got a new right tackle as well. So that kind of just helps out with Arch's decision making and being able to be comfortable in the pocket. So that's my number one bowl prediction, and that Lane Kiffin and the LSU Tigers will miss out on a New Year's Six bowl.
Boys, we all had the same thing. I also had an LSU prediction for mine. I took it a step further. I said that LSU will lose at minimum four games and that they will end up in the Music City Bowl. I think
Whoa.
That LSU, when you look at the schedule, I know that sounds crazy.
Lane would love to come to Nashville, honestly.
Oh, I'm sure he would. I'm sure Nashville would love him to come to Nashville as well. But, and I know that sounds kind of crazy, the Music City Bowl. It's usually, I mean, Tennessee made it and they went, what, 7-5 last season, I want to say?
8-5, I guess, with the bowl game.
Yeah, 8-4. I could see a world where LSU goes 8-4 or 7-5. I mean, Frazier, you just talked about the schedule they have. I think you could make the debate that LSU might have the toughest schedule in the country. Clemson, Texas A&M, I mean, Alabama, Texas, Tennessee. Those are all games against teams that either are currently ranked or very well could be ranked.
And you didn't even mention the trip to Oxford.
No. Ole Miss is there. They have to go to Auburn. They have to go to Kentucky, who I think could be a sleeper potentially on the right day.
They always sneak up on somebody, That could be a sneaky, tough game for them for sure.
I would say that they're the reason that Lane Kiffin didn't make the playoff of Ole Miss in 2024. Remember, they went and lost to Kentucky at home with Mark Stoops potentially having his job on the line. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if we saw LSU and Lane Kiffin at Nissan Stadium for the last time, the old Nissan Stadium, and playing a Big Ten team in the Music City Bowl because the schedule is so tough and the conversations surrounding this year's. See, this is why Lane shouldn't have left. It's karma because LSU went 7-5 and Ole Miss went 10-2 and they're in the playoff. I think they're going to be right here in Music City.
Oh, my. I love it. I think we're all on the same page with LSU. I don't know if it's out of spite or if it's actually off of the true knowledge of college football.
Can it be a mix of both?
Yeah.
It sure can be. It's America. Free speech. We can do whatever, right? Yeah, no, for sure. I think it is a mixture of both. It really is. Well, you know, we're kind of cutting pressing on time for the first segment. I'll hold it. We'll break here, give a little bit of a longer second segment just to give more time for us to go back and forth on these predictions because I feel like we're about to really open up more of what chaos could unfold in college football this season. Right here on the Weekend Huddle on 102.5 The Game, we'll be back with more. Weekend Huddle, 102.5 The Game, right back here on these airwaves. Dr. Brandon Frazier, Brandon Bigsby, and Christian Skelton Red. As we continue our bold predictions of a college football season, you know what, Red, you've been just a little quiet behind the glass today. What you got for us for number two? I'm a little excited for this one.
So this one, I was just talking to Bigsby about this during the break. So this one's more of a game prediction, but I still think it's pretty bold. I said Michigan upsets Indiana at the Big House to end their winning streak. That is when Indiana's winning streak will end, is when they go to the Big House.
Whoa. Whoa. So are you confident that Michigan's going to be good this year, or is that just one of those upsets that you just –
It's more so of a just Kyle Whittingham confidence than anything. Like, I think I still only had Michigan going, like, 9-3. Nothing crazy. I mean, it'd still be – I'd be a pretty solid year one under Whittingham, in my opinion. And then you'd have Bryce Underwood coming back in 27 as a junior, and, you know, you'd be able to build off that. And I think getting a win like that especially could really give you some confidence. I mean – I think they have to go to Eugene, if I'm not mistaken. weekend, I don't see them winning that game. They're not going to win in Columbus. And then I actually had Oklahoma beating them as well early in the year. But I think it's one of those things where I think they're just going to catch them at the right time and on the right day. You know, Indiana will have not really I can't remember if that game is before or after Ohio State. I should have
looked. It is the week after Ohio State. Ohio State is October 17th. In Bloomington, and then Michigan is October 24th, so it is the week
that also
after.
That also helped my logic here. I knew when I did that extra. See, for those who don't know, Bigsby put me onto this. I predicted all 902 college football games for this upcoming season yesterday, so that's a lot of games to remember. And I knew it was somewhere. I knew there was a reason I did this. That's why. Yeah, week after Ohio State, I actually had Indiana winning that game against Ohio State, and then, you know, classic letdown spot. Just like Tennessee, to bring it back locally here, I have Tennessee beating Alabama, and then the next week, they get to go to South Carolina, and South Carolina is coming off a bye week, and that will be Tennessee's last game before their bye week. So, you know, the situation's not the best there for either team.
I'm fascinated that you both went through, what, you said 903 games, is that right?
It's something like that, isn't it? When like
it's like 900, a little over 900. Something. Yeah, like 938.
That was including conference championship games. It was like 902, something like that.
God bless you both. If I had the website, I probably would have done the same thing. Would that be considered Sickos Committee? Is that what that is on Twitter? Would that be considered?
One thing I will say, and Brandon can probably agree with me on this, shout out ESPN FPI for the help with the group of five games, because I had no idea what I was doing on a lot of those.
902 is the official number.
Oh, my goodness. Well, hey, shout out to our Memphis friends. 902, area code.
Yeah, good pull. Good point.
Thank you very much. They're a group of six, group of five team. You know, I had to throw that in. They play UNLV tonight, right?
Yes, I believe so. Memphis is a team that could be one to watch out for, too. That American Conference is wide open. They'll be playing at 9 p.m. tonight in Las Vegas.
That'll be a fun one to watch. I'm a big Dan Mullen fan. I can't help it, being at Mississippi State and then leaving to go to Florida for his dream job. And apparently that didn't work out. He's still very salty about that. Now he's in Las Vegas. But I like that second prediction out of you, Christian. That is a interesting one. I never really thought of it that way, but I think you're right. They're catching Indiana at the right time coming off of Ohio State. That's what I meant by before, yes, before, after. It was like, oh, Ohio State's before. But, wow, I think that is very valid. And the fact that Indiana, I think we're going to see signs of regression from that team this year because there's no Fernando Mendoza. I mean, they don't have his little brother. His little brother went to Georgia Tech. So we'll see how that all plays out. But I'm with you on that. Christian. Brando, what you got for your second one?
I teased this a little bit earlier on when we were talking about the power of the conferences and the SEC, the Big Ten, and the Big 12, and the ACC. We're going to take it to the ACC, the Atlantic Coast Conference, and this not so Atlantic Coast anymore. However, I think that after last season getting just one team in the college football playoff and barely getting them in, I think that the ACC has two representatives in the CFP, one being Miami and the other being one of Louisville, SMU, or Clemson.
You think the Ponies got something?
If you had to pick one, who would you pick of those three?
I would probably lean towards SMU. And that might surprise some people because SMU is not your typical team that you would imagine being a playoff contender. But you have to remember, they made the playoff 2 years ago. And SMU, they have Jennings, the quarterback, who I think is really good. I think that it's a team that brings back a lot of talent. The schedule for them is not overly difficult. They have a couple of games where they're going to have to obviously watch out and be careful. But, I mean, I'm looking at it right now. They play Louisville September 19th, so that game will sort itself out. They play Virginia October 17th. Really, outside those two, it's Notre Dame on November 21st. That is the toughest game on their schedule. I think that if they beat Louisville and Virginia, they have a very good shot at being either 11-1 or 10-2 come the end of the regular season. That's enough to get you in, especially if they end up playing against Miami in the ACC title game. I wanted to pick Louisville. I just think that the non-conference for them is a little bit tough. I think that they'll probably end up being a 2-3 loss team, and then SMU winning the head-to-head would be what puts them over.
You know how to play the guitar around me, Brandon Bigsby, because that is a soft spot on the track, because I'm a big SMU Ponies fan. That goes way back to the college football video game days because I had a great dynasty with them. And I actually grew a true fandom for the university. And I think what Rhett Lashley has done there with that team has just been fantastic. And you're right, Kevin Jennings. You know, I don't know if you guys know this or not. Fun fact, he's the only active college football player that has a facility named after him.
Really? Wow.
On the university, yeah. It's the athletic department. I guess that was a part of his NIL deal. I'm not too sure, but that is
I forgot they did that.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, so, you know, Kevin Jennings, he's a special talent, but he's definitely going to have to prove himself this year.
Yeah, and I mentioned Clemson in there as the other one. I like Clemson. I think that they're a lot better than people are giving them credit for. I think that a lot of people just kind of soured on them because it's Dabo, obviously, and Dabo was a polarizing figure, and he was very anti-transfer portal and anti-NIL, and it's easy to dunk on Dabo right now, and I get that, but if you look at Clemson's schedule, it's honestly pretty much a cakewalk outside of having to play LSU in Miami. I think that there's not another game on the schedule that they'll lose. Maybe South Carolina, but that game is in Death Valley. It's at home. Maybe right. Virginia Tech gives them a tough game.
South Carolina's beat them the last two times they've been there.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not very high on South Carolina. That was another bold take that I was thinking about getting, but I'd skipped out on that one for a different one. But I just think that SMU, considering the tough schedule they have, I think that they would probably get the nod over them.
Yeah, I think that's pretty spot on. As for my second prediction, the North Dakota State Bison, they make the college football playoff in year one of being the
wow.
FCS.
I would absolutely love that.
Me too. I like that a lot.
I think they win the Mountain West Conference, and that championship game will be UNLV and North Dakota State. I think that'll be a fantastic one to watch, and North Dakota State making a statement this year and going to the playoff in year one.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a really bold one because that means South Florida probably has to have two losses, I would assume, and then Boise probably has to have two losses because Boise's probably going to have at least one loss given they have to go to Eugene. But, yeah. I mean, it could definitely happen. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, and even conference championship weekend, it could happen as late as that. You know, Boise could lose the Pac-12 championship game, and then USF could lose to Tulane in the American championship game. I mean, anything can happen when it comes to that G5 spot, or I guess G6 now. Does it even matter? Yeah. Is it G6 or is it G5, or do we even know?
I don't think
I just think of that one song where it says, like a G6 or whatever. Like, that's what this is. That's their theme song for the rest of the way out.
Might as well be.
But no, like this North Dakota State schedule, Jackson State week one, Fordham, Air Force, Sacramento State, Wyoming, UNLV, that'll be the tough one in October the 10th, Nevada, New Mexico, you have UTEP, Hawaii, Northern Illinois, and San Jose State to wrap up the season. Again, these are G6 schools. I kind of lean the benefit of the doubt of North Dakota State's a pretty good team, but there is that little, you know, issue jumping from FCS to FBS, but I think they have the intangibles to do so to make it deep run this year.
I like that a lot. It will be interesting to see if it happens just because, like we mentioned, that group of six spot is just so wide open, and maybe or maybe not my last prediction has something to do with the group of six, but North Dakota State making it would be such an interesting case because they wouldn't be the only example of a team that jumped up and kind of made it in. I mean, look at JMU last year. I mean, they've only been an FBS team for, what, 3-4 seasons, and they made the college football playoff at 12-2. So it would maybe start a bit of a trend of these high-powered FCS teams making the jump up a level, and they come in and they go into one of these group of six conferences, and they prove that they're on their level and can go in and be a college football playoff team. I like that a lot. That'd be a ton of fun if it happens.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, you also got to remember the amount of money that these teams get when they go into the playoff. It's huge for those teams that make that FCS to FBS jump. And if they can get in there, then that's great for them. I mean, look, like you mentioned JMU, for example. Bob Chesney, who was their head coach, he was at Holy Cross beforehand. Really good coach. He left. He went to a different job. Now you got Billy Napier back at JMU. So we'll see how that all plays out. But this should be a fun season for the Bison at North Dakota State.
Yeah, I'm all with it.
I mean,
what you got for three?
I've always loved North Dakota State, so I would be all for that. My third bold prediction, the USC Trojans, build for suspense, will build for suspense some more, go 8-4. And Lincoln Riley might be getting fired if that happens. I couldn't decide if I actually wanted to say he's getting fired or not, because I'm at the point with USC, I'm like, do they even care anymore? Like, do they, are they truly even invested? Well, I know they're invested because obviously there's money in that program, but like, are they truly invested in caring about being a winner? Like, do they care enough that like, if Lincoln Riley rattles off an 8-4 this year, that they're just going to be like, yeah, okay, yeah, whatever, come back next year, just because of what it took to get him there? I don't know about that, but I, regardless, I think they're going 8-4 this year.
I just look at USC and, like, same thing with Tennessee, like the Josh Heupel conversation. Who else are you going to get? You know?
See, I don't know. Like, honestly, you know what I was about to say? You know where my mind immediately went? Kalen DeBoer. That's where my mind immediately went.
I'd like
West
that
Coast guy.
Successful.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they'd be able to lure him away from Bama, but I mean, he is a West Coast guy, so.
They may not have to lure him away from Bama, depending on how Bama does.
I got a better idea. Just go get Kiffin again. Just run it back.
Hey, maybe that's Music City Bowl. It's USC versus LSU.
Oh, my God.
That's a good one. let's merge our bold predictions together. Love it.
Brando, what you got for number three?
All right. I teased it a little bit just then when you mentioned the whole group of six thing. But, gentlemen, we love our troops around here. We love our armed forces. We love the men and women that serve this country. Shout out to anyone out there that's listening who serves, or anyone that knows anyone or has family members who serves. I think that for the first time ever, we will have a military school in the college football playoff. My prediction, Navy will represent the group of six.
America.
Making the playoffs over Boise State, JMU, and the rest of the American Conference. Now, I know Navy is technically one of the betting favorites, and I get that. However, I think that this counts as a bold take because it is so difficult for one of these group of six teams to get in, especially since now that the rules have been kind of changed around and the odds of getting two group of six teams in are very, very slim. I like this Navy team a lot. I think that their schedule is a great balance between being challenging enough for them to be respected, but also not being overly tough to where they're going to end up being a three-loss team. The toughest game they have is Notre Dame. I think that's going to be an automatic loss. But outside of that, I don't think they lose more than one game in the American Conference. I think that they end up playing a team like a Memphis, like a USF, or maybe East Carolina, who I think is a sleeper in the American, in that conference title game. I think they squeak past Army in that Army-Navy game, who also will be a very good team. And I think it's enough to get them in the college football playoff and be the 12th seed.
Amen. Happy birthday, America, from July 4th. I think that's what we're talking about.
I think my question about this, don't they release the playoff bracket the week before the Army-Navy game? How would that work?
Ooh.
How do they make that work? I hope it happens. I'm not trying to dunk on your. I'm legitimately asking just because we've never been put in that position.
No, that's a great question.
I mean, I guess Army was really good a couple of years ago, but everybody knew Boise was so good. Everybody knew that was going to be the G5 spot, so we didn't have to worry about it. But yeah, I don't know how they would handle that if Navy's 10-1 or, and you know. I guess they would have already played the conference championship game, though. Because, yeah, Army played the conference championship game the week before they played Navy. So if they win the conference championship, then I guess they'd be like, oh, well, good enough. You're in, whether you beat Army or not.
I could have sworn that Army-Navy was before the college conference championship.
I just the way I remember that is they play that game on the same day as the Heisman is given out. And then that's the week after always.
Man, I like this Navy team a lot. I just think that they have a lot of talent on this team. They brought a good amount of talent back from last season's team. And, I mean, you even go back and, I mean, look at last season. You mentioned that Army was a ranked team a couple of years ago. We knew that Boise State was going to get in. They were, the number four seed? They made it to the Fiesta Bowl automatically. But, I mean, Navy last year went 11-2. The year before that, they went 10-3. So this is a team that has proven to be consistently really solid, and I think that it's so wide open. Boise State has some really tough matchups on their schedule, including Oregon. I think that USF, there's a lot of hype around them. I'm not really buying into it just yet. I got to see what they do with the new coaching staff. I think that things line up really well for Navy if they can just win their conference out. I'm not worried about them beating Notre Dame. I'm not expecting them to. They'll probably lose that game by 30. If they just win out in the American, or not lose more than a game in the American, I think they have a really good shot it being able to get that spot.
I like it. The midshipman making some deep runs in the CFP from Brandon Bigsby. As for my third, it kind of echoes what you're talking about a little bit there, Brando. You mentioned Notre Dame. I'm a Catholic boy. Can't help it. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Amen. I do think Notre Dame goes the distance. I say they make the semifinals, the final four of the college football playoff. This is their year. I think what Marcus Freeman has done, yes, they've lost some players, key players, and Love and Price, but minus that, they got C.J. Carr. They have, you know, a handful of players returning. I looked at that depth chart. I think they went to the portal for like two or three guys on offense. This is the year of Catholicism for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Touchdown Jesus will resurrect multiple fan bases across the United States. Maybe some Notre Dame fans that have been closet Notre Dame fans for quite some time come out of their closets and say, hey, we are going all the way this year. I do think Notre Dame makes a good run for sure. I think it's a national title.
I'm about to say, come on, say they're winning it all. Don't just stop on semifinals. Say they're winning it all.
I'm not. Let's go for it. They're going all the way. They win it all. Notre Dame is my national champion, darling. As I've said before on these airwaves, I do think Georgia's a deep team in Texas. But you know what? There's something about Marcus Freeman and this Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Give it to me. I'm rolling with the Irish this year.
I like it.
I mean, I think they're one of the favorites for sure. I mean, they are one of the favorites. And, I mean, the only thing that worries me, well, no, that doesn't worry me. I was about to say, you know, battle-tested. That doesn't really matter for Indiana last year, so that doesn't really matter at all. And it's a case-to-case basis, but, you know, it doesn't always matter that way. The one thing that actually does worry, or it does, goodness gracious, words are so hard sometimes. The thing that doesn't worry me at all is, they're pretty much a lock to make the playoff, especially with the new tie-in this year, too, of where if they're in the top 12, they're in. I think the odds I saw this morning was, like, make the playoff odds. I think Notre Dame's odds for that is, like, minus 800, which is basically saying they're already in the playoff before the season even starts. So that's the main thing they have going for them, for sure.
I might push back on that just a little bit because I'm looking at Notre Dame's schedule. And if you guys remember, we were in the studio, what was it, about 2 weeks ago? We were talking about the Kurt Cignetti comments with the schedules and all that. And I made the comment that Indiana, I think, has a worse schedule than Notre Dame. I'm looking at Notre Dame's schedule right now. Would you believe it if I told you they play three teams that are ranked in the top 20?
So that's BYU, Miami, BYU, SMU, right?
Yes, BYU is 14. They play them October 17th. That's going to be a stacked week, by the way, for college football.
Yes, it is.
They play Miami November 7th, and then they play SMU November 21st. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I don't think it is the craziest thing that they could lose two of those three. And considering that they are not in a conference and they missed out on the playoff last year because they were not in a conference and had a quote-unquote weak schedule, but this one is tougher, they lost two games last year. 10-2 was not enough to get them in, and they were to number 10 Miami and number 16 Texas A&M. So I actually think that it is bold. There's a possibility that they don't get in.
Just to play devil's advocate here, they would have gotten in with this year's format because they would have been in the top 12, and then they, yeah.
Yeah, but that's true.
I hear you, though, for sure. I mean, all three of those games they could lose. I mean, I don't think they're going to lose all three, but they are all three losable games for sure. I personally think they're going to win all three of them. But I think BYU is the one that could trip them up the most just because, you know, going to Provo, you never know what can happen there. So I think BYU is the most dangerous one of those three for me personally.
Kalani Sitake runs a heck of a program, man. And that's a BYU team that I think can hang with just about anybody. That's going to be a tough game. And I'm high on SMU, so that's why I think they could probably stick around in that game. Miami, we saw how close that game was last year, so it is in South Bend. I think that'll help out a little bit, but I think that's bold from Nick Frazier.
The line on the SMU game is like 17.5, I think, is what I saw yesterday.
That feels disrespectful.
That's crazy.
To me,
I was thinking 10, maybe 13. 17.5 seemed wild to me.
I'm smashing under.
Let's not forget about BYU's unorthodox quarterback that wears number 47, Bear Bachmeier. All right, let's not forget about that.
Right?
Why choose 47? The world may never know. But you know what? I love it. That's what makes college football great.
One of many things.
Like we were talking about, it's something you wouldn't see on Sundays. As much as we love Sundays, it's something you were not going to see on Sundays.
Indeed, for sure. For sure. Well, fellas, I have to skedaddle because if I don't go in the next 5 minutes, I will be stuck here all day in a hotel room. So my ride is on a ticking time here. So I'm going to leave the rest of the show for you guys. I will send the Where Are They Now picks on my end and send the results from last week. I trust you guys. You guys are the best. As always, on the Weekend Huddle, appreciate for everybody listening. Keep on listening along. I am skedaddling for the day. See you guys next weekend.
So long, sir. Appreciate you.
Yeah, have a good one.
See you guys.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and go to break, boys. We will be right back here in a moment. We'll have our Where Are They Now? The Hall of Fame in just a few minutes. Connor Newt will be joining us, as he rightfully will. We'll have Frazier's picks, our picks, and we'll also recap our Hall of Fame inductees from last week. So do not go anywhere. You're listening to the Weekend Huddle on 1025 The Game. If I had to. Back with you here on Weekend Huddle on 102.5 The Game. Brandon Bigsby, Christian Skelton with you here from our Busy Bee Studios. One more segment before we get to Where Are They Now. Connor Newt will be joining us to take part of the festivities. We continue our Hall of Fame inductees for the great Where Are They Now segment. But before we get to that, let's talk Titans here a little bit, Christian. Obviously, the Tennessee Titans getting set for their final preseason game here at 5 o'clock today. They'll be going up against the Chicago Bears. I got to ask you, man, what are your thoughts on this one? What are you going to be looking towards with this being the last game in the preseason and there being so much controversial conversation, for lack of a better term, surrounding how the Titans have looked in the first two preseason games? What are you going to be looking for, man? Because this is the last opportunity for this team to get right before we see them in week one against the Jets.
So first thing I'm going to ask here is, do we know how many of the Bears starters are playing? Have we figured that out?
Because, I don't believe so.
And a lot of times you don't figure that out till right before the game. So, but it hasn't mattered the first 2 weeks, so I'll just say it. Please do not look like string cheese on defense that just gets shredded. Like you look like a middle school team. Just look competent on defense, specifically in the secondary. Look competent. From what I heard, you know, the first bit of joint practice, they were still getting shredded like shredded cheese. But you know, they got into the flow of things after that. So maybe they just need to get into the flow of games. Maybe the first parts of games is just going to be really bad for this defense. This is just something we're going to have to get used to. I don't know, but I think that's my biggest thing. Just look competent on defense today. Because the first two games, it has not been fun to watch from the ones.
Yeah, especially because they have been playing against twos. And I think that that is what has incited a lot of the panic from the Titans fan base, is that your starters are out there and they're going up against guys who are going to be backups, are barely going to see the field. Some of them are unfortunately going to be looking for new jobs after tomorrow. And when you see your starters out there and they look pretty much lost, especially I think in the secondary where it's been really egregious, it's understandable why that would have some concern. I think on the other side of the ball for me, and I know that a lot of people are going to instantly go towards the Cam Ward side of it, I'm actually going to go towards the other side of it. I'm curious if the receivers can continue the momentum that we saw from them on Thursday. The big story out of that joint practice was how good the passing game looked, and especially number 4 overall pick Carnell Tate. The reports coming out of those practices is that the Bears really had no answer for Carnell Tate. And obviously, the whole conversation with Carnell Tate is he hasn't caught a pass. He had 6 targets, hasn't done anything whatsoever in his first two preseason games. I don't think that a lot of that is on him. I know he had the one near catch over on the sideline. He probably should have hauled in, and I get that. But I'm very curious to see if the momentum that we saw from the offense, and especially that receiving room in the joint practice on Thursday, can continue its way into the night and maybe give the fan base and the media here just a little bit of hope, that little bit of, okay, maybe they're finding their groove here a little bit right before we get into that week one opening game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the receiver that showed you the most in that joint practice was Carnell Tate. And I mean, we've heard great things from all these practices all preseason and all offseason about how great Carnell has looked at on the practice field. And, you know, preseason, you know, it's okay if he doesn't get the ball a lot, which he hasn't, obviously. And, you know, the times he has gotten it, like last week, went right through his fingertips. So I think that's another thing you really would like to see. I mean, it's not the end of the world if you don't. Folks, it's the last preseason game. Wait to panic until September 13th that there's something to panic about. That's what I always try to caution everybody, even myself. I'm saying that to myself, too. Just panic on September 13th. But I think, you know, you really want to see Carnell Tate make some plays today, in my opinion, for confidence for him, if nothing else. I mean, you know, if he can get out there, and obviously the Bears' defense is, you know, pretty solid. They weren't one of the best defenses in the NFL, but they had to at least be solid enough to make go on a much of a run as they did. So, yeah, if you're Carnell, just show me something today. It's the meme. Show me something, Carnell. That's what I would say.
Yeah, show me something, Carnell. And, you know, I think another thing that I'm really going to be interested to look at is, you could argue this for every position group, especially at the quarterback position, how the snaps and reps are going to be distributed today. I think that you want to see Cam Ward for at least one or two possessions, depending on how long it goes. I think if the offense for the Titans starts and they go down the field and they score after one possession, I'm good. I don't need to see anything else. It's week three. You know what things are looking like. It's been a vanilla offense anyways. I don't need to see anything past that if they do go down the field.
End on a positive note if that happens. Just stop. Yes. Quit while you're ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Quit while you're ahead. Leave the preseason with some confidence. But I think outside of that, you won't see the starters much. I'm really interested to see what the quarterback reps look like, because I actually think I would make the argument that I don't really have to see Mitch Trubisky tonight. I would be completely fine if you just let Will Levis and Hendon Hooker go out there and take the entirety of the snaps after Cam Ward.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know Mitch is making the team, so you don't really have any decision to make there. I mean, I know you want to get as many reps as he can, but, I mean, he's been in the league for longer than all three of those quarterbacks, so he probably doesn't need him as much as the other three quarterbacks. So, yeah, I kind of agree with you. Just let Levis and Hooker go battle out for that last quarterback.
Yeah, and I think that there is a very real chance, as crazy as this is to say, that tonight could be the last time that we see Will Levis in a Tennessee Titans uniform. He has been awful, quite frankly. Not all of that is his fault. I think that the offensive line has not done him many favors, but what we saw last week was bad, man. It was not good.
I'll tease the next segment. Would you say that Will Levis is washed?
He could be washed. It's very possible. And speaking of washed, coming up next, our Where Are They Now Hall of Fame continues. We have Nick Fraser's picks. Connor Newt will be calling in and joining us for this segment. So do not go away. The Where Are They Now Hall of Fame, our inductees, coming up next. You're listening to the Weekend Huddle right here on 102.5 The Game. This never gets old. It never gets old.
It never could.
Not at all. Back with you on Weekend Huddle. One final segment. Brandon Bigsby, Christian Skelton with you here at our Busy Bee Studios. Nick Fraser had to step out a little bit early, but joining us on the program, one of the pioneers of Where Are They Now, host of The Six, producer of DVD, the one and only Connor New. Connor, my man, it's like I just saw you. How you doing, man?
Like we just saw each other, like, I don't know, 10 hours ago. I'm good, man. I'm reeling from last night. It takes a toll on the body. You wouldn't believe it, but it actually does. So I'm good. I'm hanging in there, getting ready to go cover some Titans preseason football tonight. But this is the most important thing of the day.
You have the priorities, and it's one of the many reasons I appreciate and respect you. So let's not waste any time. Let's go right into it. Our Where Are They Now Hall of Fame inductees. You go back to last week. This was our first group that we nominated. Shaquille O'Neal, Jimmer Fredette, Josh Dobbs, Derrick Rose. And we did not mention this last week. However, after a mutual unanimous decision from the Where Are They Now Hall of Fame committee, Tavon Austin is being automatically inducted into our Where Are They Now Hall of Fame. It was only right. It was only right. It would be wrong if he were not automatically inducted and surpassing the voting process.
It had to happen. I mean, you know, Tavon is one of the legends of the game, so it had to be done. I feel like I should be playing hell and back right now since we forgot to announce that last week. But, you know, yeah, it had to happen. It was a no-brainer.
All right, let's go ahead and get into our picks. We will start out with Nick Frazier's. Again, unfortunately, could not finish out the rest of the show, but he did send his Where Are They Now picks because, again, we know our priorities around here. Nick Frazier, his inductees are the following. Carmelo Anthony, Mike Conley, and out of the NFL, Tennessee Volunteers legend Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah, I think we had him a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
A recent Where Are They Now question. So, yeah, love to see that.
Yeah, I like that list. Carmelo was on there last week, if I recall, and Mike Conley and Cordarrelle Patterson, two new additions to the poll. Christian, let's go over to you, my man. Who are your inductees for this week?
All right, I'll make these first two quick since one were pressed for time, yeah. And also they're two from last week. Josh Johnson returns from last week. He slightly was outdone by Josh Dobbs. Again, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope from last week. You know, I've tried to make him a Kentucky Wildcat many times. He's not. He's a Georgia Bulldog. And then my third contestant, or candidate, I guess, for this week, we went with Titans legend and Vols legend Justin Hunter. The one and only.
Wow. So we have two former – they were on the same team as well, Cordarrelle Patterson and Justin Hunter. How about that?
The Derek Dooley Vols being well represented today.
Oh, the Derek – so Justin Hunter, Josh Johnson back again, and what was that third one more time for us?
It was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who was also represented last week. Connor Newt, your three inductees.
Well, we'll keep a common theme going. I'll bring one from last week because I feel like he deserves to be mentioned. And Nick Frazier will be proud of me for putting this one on here. Mr. DeMarcus Cousins, Puerto Rico legend, Boogie, as he's called, played for a lot of teams. I feel like he needs to be represented in the Hall of Fame. And my other two are new. In the NFL, played at Georgia Tech, played with a couple NFL teams, no longer plays football. Now he is known as our tribal chief, Mr. Roman Reigns, in the Hall of Fame. And my last selection, we just talked to him last night, Bigsby, former Vol legend, current head coach at Lawson High School, Mr. Montario Hardesty.
Oh, that's
what
good.
A class that is. That's going to be tough to make a decision on.
Yeah, that is a really, really good class. I like that. How about the Metro Nashville Public Schools being represented there with Coach Hardesty? I like it a lot. All righty.
He was cool.
Go ahead, Connor.
I said he was cool. I like talking to him.
Yeah, he was awesome. Shout out, by the way, to Big Joe. Make sure to tune into the Game Blitz on Friday nights at 9:30 for all your high school coverage. Okay, my inductees. We're going back to one from last week with Ryan Fitzpatrick. He played for a million teams. I think he deserves to be there. I'm also going to re-add Blake Griffin. We were talking about Blake Griffin a little bit the other day with his last couple of years there with the Nets and the Celtics. I think he deserves a shout. And then we're going to add a new one. It's one that you used, actually, on me the other day, Connor Newt. Tabu Cephalosha, Oklahoma City Thunder legend, the Swiss Army Knife himself. I think he deserves a shout. He's just one of those names, man. You can't help but to think of this game and think of Tabu Cephalosha.
What a legend of the game.
Beautiful.
Tabu Cephalosha.
Beautiful stuff from you, Bigsby. Okay, give us a recap.
All right.
And then we need to vote.
Yes, our recap, our week two picks. Nick Frazier's. Carmelo Anthony, Mike Conley, and Cordarrelle Patterson. My vote is going to be for Carmelo. Newt, what are you thinking?
Oh, it's a tough one. I'll go with Carmelo just because I'm thinking of the unction Lakers team they had a couple years ago, where it was him, DeAndre Jordan, Russell Westbrook, LeBron, AD. I think it's got to be Carmelo. I second this vote.
And I'm fine with that. I was going to say Cordarrelle, but considering I'm outvoted, it doesn't matter. So Carmelo is our winner from Frazier's there.
Carmelo Anthony, Where Are They Now? A Hall of Famer. On the Christians, he has Justin Hunter, Josh Johnson, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. My vote has to be for Josh Johnson. He was so close last week. We were splitting hairs on who it would be. I think he deserves to get in this time around. Newt, what do you got?
Did Justin Hunter play for any other teams other than the Titans?
He did, actually. He played for the Dolphins, the Bills, and the Steelers, apparently.
Oh, okay. I'm still going to go Josh Johnson.
I am too.
Play for too many teams to be disrespected like that.
Yeah, Josh Johnson for sure.
All right, Josh Johnson, who, like we said, I think we all figured he was going to get in at this point, right? He's like the one that's not first ballot, but you know he's going to get in the next year. That's Josh Johnson. Connor, I apologize. You're going to have to remind me of yours because for some reason it deleted when I typed it in. So please recap yours for us.
DeMarcus Cousins, Joe Adeleye, as we call him, and Montario Hardesty.
OTC, Roman.
I'm really struggling between OTC or Montario Hardesty. But I feel it feels wrong to not acknowledge the tribal chief Roman Reigns. However, I'm turning Montario Hardesty. I'm representing the Metro Schools. Give me his vote.
Oh, so I gotta break a tie here. Okay. You know what? To not put him in would be to not acknowledge him. And the bloodline would come after us and probably hurt us. My tribal chief, congratulations. You are in the Hall of Fame.
How about that?
How about that? Just another accolade for Roman Reigns at the head of the table.
And then Bixby, you are last, correct?
Yes, I am. My three, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Blake Griffin, and Tabo Sevelotion. Connor, you go ahead and go first. Who you got?
It's Tabo. I mean, come on. That name, you just... you're flooded with memories of Tabo Sevelosha. I couldn't tell you one team he played for unless it was in front of me, but you know the name, and he's a Where Are They Now legend. So Tabo Sevelosha is my vote.
I'll let you go ahead, Bigsby, actually.
Oh, thank you. You know, at first I was thinking Ryan Fitzpatrick, but as Connor said, he's a legend. You can't think of those old OKC teams without thinking Tabo Sevelosha. Give me Tabo! In the Where Are They Now
Hall
of Fame.
And this is why I let you go first, because I was going to say Fitz, and now that doesn't matter. Y'all overruled me. That's fine. Completely justified. Love to see it.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Roman Reigns, Josh Johnson, Tabo Sevelosha, and Carmelo Anthony, your four newest picks, joining Tavon Austin, Shaquille O'Neal, Jimmer Fredette, Josh Dobbs, and Derrick Rose in our first group of the Where Are They Now class Hall of Fame. Connor, thank you for joining us, man. Good luck tonight. Get you some rest. I know you're going to crush it out there as you cover the Titans preseason game versus the Bears tonight.
Thanks, boys. At @C_Newt15 is where you can find all our coverage. We'll be reposting on the 102.5 the game account as well. So keep it locked. We got all lots of coverage tonight for you.
All right here on 102.5 The Game. Thank you, Connor, for myself, Brandon Bigsby, for Nick Frazier, who was with us for the first hour and 45 minutes, for Christian Skelton behind the glass. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll be right back with you right here on the Weekend Huddle next Saturday, 9 a.m. Be here on 102.5 The Game. Thank you all for tuning in. Have a blessed rest of the day.